हरिः श्रीयाद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. So now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has started talking about the various purushas in charge of the levels of consciousness. Right? So this is actually a very major element of the philosophy. But it's not necessarily well known. Devotees have heard of it or they've heard of aspects of it. But this is actually quite a major position in the Upanishadic. So in Vedanta, it's used a lot. It's used a lot in consideration of placement of things. And just like everything's according to Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So you're dealing basically with your levels of, that establishes the tattva and everything. But this other, the consciousness, kind of establishes interaction. So it's kind of like your positions of rasa, like that. And then all the different, how it means the consciousness you have, therefore what rasa, the because of the consciousness, what do you take as authority? Does that make sense? These two major aspects come out of here, and then that, like your position, your all these different things, what's actually primary, what's in between. Does that make sense? Yes.
Means your rasa decides who will be your authority. Your rasa is first?
It's just like, let's say, if you're in parental Ras, okay, where are your authorities? Means, to know about parental Ras, who do you learn from? Yeah, from those in parental Ras. But it's like, if your interest is in the senses, where do you get your authority from? The senses themselves, right? Now, if you're into extended sense gratification, that, you know, worrying about others' sense gratification, where do you get your authority from? From others. You understand? So that's how it goes. Does that make sense? So in other words, the anamoy, that's the level of consciousness, but where you get your information from is from the senses. Does that make sense? That's why in the Vedic standard, if someone is only purely a scientist, but not connected to the Vedas, then they're put on the platform of anamoy, because all of their information only comes from the senses. They're only worried about how it works. So even though in the modern ideas that they're topmost because of their intelligence is being applied simply at the level of sense gratification. So basically all it is they're just really sharp animals, that's all. You know what I'm saying? One may complain, but if you've ever actually dealt with hardcore scientists, they can hardly socially function. Right? Pranamoy just does not exist for them. Right? Does that make sense? The only reason you write papers or interact with others is because if you don't, you're history. That's it. So to maintain your position, you put on your suit, you know, not very well. You go to the programs, you say hello to everybody and shake everybody's hand, but you really don't know what's happening. You know what I'm saying? It's just, I'm talking about the top guys that are just so in their head. They can't function socially hardly. And when they do, it's basically animalistic. Very simple, shy, or if they get into kind of social interaction, it's based on sex. And they're very gross. Like that. I'm talking about like these physicists and this kind of level of people. Like that. Because that's all they deal with is dead matter. So what do you want from the consciousness? So much intelligence is applied simply to dead matter. You know what I'm saying? So what do you want? So therefore, then, basically on the platform of animals, you're the lowest. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then, okay. Starting with Brahmavid Apnoti Param, the Taittiriya Upanishad describes the creation of the Anamaya Purusha after listing elements starting with Akasha coming from Brahman. Different forms internal to the previous one are then successively described. The Anamaya Purusha, Pranamaya, so here is as it goes up, it gets higher, right? Right, and the creation is coming down, it's more subtle, it gets more gross. This one is, you know, as it goes, it's same, like I said, same principle. The lower it is, the grosser, the higher it is, the more subtle. Pranamaya Purusha, Manomaya Purusha, Vijnanamaya Purusha, and finally the Anandamaya Purusha, which is considered to be Brahman. Brahma Sutra 1.1.13 describes this Anandamayo Bhyasata. From the repetition of the words, Anandamaya refers to the Supreme Lord. But it also says, Ananda Atma Brahma Pucham Pratishtha. Impersonal Brahman is only the tail of that Anandamaya Purush. Interesting, the tail. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.5, right? So this is the section we're in, it's the second section. So that's on the, it's on Ananda. It's about, it's called the Ananda Vali. The Lord is the...
Ananda is considered to be Brahman?
The Ananda level is Brahman. See, because your Anamoy, right, is the senses. Pranamoy is extended sense gratification. Manamoy is religious principles. Vijnanamoy is the, your, how you say, the spiritual concept of the soul, you know, but still within the material framework. And then the Anandamaya means the transcendental platform. Right? So... then this Anandamaya Purush has three aspects, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So Brahman is the tail of the Anandamaya Purusha, the actual form, the full form. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the Brahman platform. Yes?
For each of the other four, what is the term Purusha referring to?
Because it's, it means, in other words, the entering into everything, Brahman enters everything and makes it work, so that's still, that's the Lord who's doing that. The religious principles, religion, he is enter, that is him. He is the social body, he is the senses, he means, because he sees, you see. Because he's created, you know, the social interaction, you can interact. Because he's created the rules on which it functions, then it works. So that's the meaning of him being everything. That in its supreme state, it's only the Lord. Then that's manifest to us through the external potency, which is also one of his energies, but inferior. But it's his his superior potencies that pervade it, that make it function, and it appears to us, therefore, to be real. Right? It means real in the sense that it's alive. Right? It's real in the sense of his existence. But in the thing that the material energy is alive, that's an illusion. Right? That makes it, it's dead matter that the Lord's potencies have pervaded, including the jivas. Right? And so, therefore, it appears to be alive, and moving, and thinking, and feeling, willing, all these things. Yes?
Why is this the Anamaya Purusha? Is that the potency by which vegetables are created, by that potency? As it was said earlier, that matter can create vegetables.
Matter can create vegetables.
Yeah.
Matter can create vegetables.
Yeah.
Are you sure you're not, if you're too absorbed in matter, you become like a vegetable?
I'll try to get the reference.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's what we were talking about.
Okay.
Susan's text means that everybody's just
okay, maybe that
potatoes,
was
right? You know, it's just like, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head. You know. Yeah. Great fun for me.
That's a good
one. Because, no, matter doesn't produce anything. Yeah. Vegetables, that they're happening because of the moon. But the point is that everything is happening, life's happening because the jiva's there, the Lord's there. Because that matters not. But that control of it, and that, in other words, how the matter is functioning, and means that's just straight facts, that's just straight science. How Maya, through the modes of nature, makes all the transformations and everything work. That's the material cause. Though, that ability is still Krishna's potency, so it's still Krishna, right? But she's doing that. But that's just fact. You know, that the certain modes that produce this rock in this particular way. But then, what we think of, so that's the side that Maya's, that's not a problem, right? And it's just direct, basically, managing it as service to Krishna, right? So that side of it is not really a problem for Maya herself. She's not in anxiety about that side of it, right? Creating the field. Now, the problem comes is that we think that field is actually alive, right? That's the side where then Maya's influence is given the illusory element. That's the side she's not so happy about. Like, you know, it's necessary, but, you know, that's the side that she feels bad about. You understand? But she does that so that living entities that aren't qualified aren't disturbing the Lord's pastimes. You know what I'm saying? Because they're not qualified. Yes.
So if all these Purushas, they actually are Brahman, can we say that the Anandamaya Purusha, which is considered to be Brahman, that's referring to part of Brahman?
Means all of it's part of Brahman. They're just different features. But what you can say is the Brahman that we talk about, changeless, you know, all-pervading, that kind of aspect that we think of Brahman or Brahma Jyoti, that's Anandamaya Purusha. Right? Anamaya is how he enters into the creation and pervading everything, because Brahman's all pervading. How he pervades, and the pervasion on the how the senses work, that's Anandamaya. How the, you know, the niti and social interaction, economics, justice, you know, ethics, all that work is working, that's your Pranamaya Purusha. Right? Then how, you know, Varnashram, the whole social system, sense of duties, you know, what work you're supposed to do, what's religious, what's irreligious, what's right, what's wrong, that's the Manamaya Purusha, right? Then the understanding of the soul and how Brahman has entered everything, that's your Vijnanamaya Purusha. Actually to be situated on the spiritual platform without any connection to the material, that's your Anandamaya Purusha. Does that make sense? Because Krishna has to pervade everything for it to work anyway. Does that make sense? Yeah. In other words, we have to be able to accommodate these elements of this oneness if we're really going to appreciate the elements of two. Right? So that's the whole point, is we can appreciate the highest sense of two because we can appreciate the highest sense of one. Right? Mayavadis have a very dull concept of one. And they can't understand two at all. Right? So here is that if everything is Krishna and he's all pervading, and that devotees will say yes, then we have to understand what that means, how he's all pervading. Right? Then we don't get confused, because one may say, what's the use of that? If you can just directly think of Krishna, then there's no need to think of that. But the point is because most in this material world aren't thinking of Krishna directly, right? That's the meaning of being here. So therefore, then by that you can point out that you're thinking like all the elements of your house are important. But what is it generating? You know, it means that, you know, what's Rishabdev talking about in the chapter we were discussing yesterday, though we should have been on the next chapter, but, you know, in any case, whatever. Does that make sense? It's about how the concept of I and mine comes up because of identifying with the family, the home, the land, the society, everything like that. I and mine comes up. Rather than, if it's material energy, it's not yours. It's pervaded by the Anamaya Purusha. Therefore, it has all the things the senses can interact. So what has it got to do with you? Right? How is it yours? Right? You're not even the body, right? You can say, okay, this house belongs to the body. But if you're not the body, then the house doesn't belong to you. It belongs to that body. And who owns the body? That's the discussion, right? That's the Upanishadic discussion. Who owns the body? Right? Means you could say the relatives own the body because they produced it, or the generations from which you're coming in and therefore you're getting the benefits. Right? You could say the government because they create the facilities that you can live peacefully. Like that, you could say it's the teacher because he's training, so therefore you can act as a human. Right? I can say it's the vultures and the crows and the dogs because after you die they'll eat it. Because you're not taking it with you. No? So who does it belong to? So you can say my house, but who's this my? Because that my is not the soul. Right? So therefore it puts it into a different perspective. That's what it does. So all this understanding of these levels of the five levels of the Purushas then removes this concept of I and mine. That's the whole purpose. That's what you're trying to do with Tattva. Remove its I and mine, and that the real I is I am serving the Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? The Lord is the basis of that Brahman. Right? So when we say Anandamaya Purusha, we're specifically meaning Brahman. Right, as opposed to Paramatma and Bhagavan. But that still is connected to, because there's a non-difference. After that, the Upanishad says, Raso vai saha, rasam yevyam labhanadi bhavati. The Lord is rasa. Realizing the Lord, one attains bliss. Right? Taitu Upanishad 2.7. But does Saha refer to the Anandamaya Purush, the Lord under discussion, or to the Brahma Pucham, impersonal Brahman? Okay? Does that make sense? So the impersonal aspect, that's the tail.
Yeah.
Right? Because the Anandamaya Purusha here is then taken from the highest level of mean, who is Rasa. Right? The Lord is rasa, not he tastes rasa, he's absorbed in rasa, he likes rasa, he is rasa. Right? Very, very important, because if he is rasa, then that means any interaction with him. Because we'll think, well, why do I have to go through the Lord? Why can't I just directly deal with the thing and be happy? But happiness is what? It's rasa. And if Krishna is rasa, that means you're not going to be able to deal with the dead matter without dealing with Krishna. Because the dead matter is not rasa. Does that make sense? So the only way to taste rasa is by being in contact with Krishna. Does that make sense? So if you're saying, no, but I'm tasting some rasa in my life, but then that's because you're doing something in your life that's correct according to God's laws. So that little bit of touching God, you're tasting some rasa and you're thinking, wow, this is bliss. You know what I'm saying? But in reality, rasa is so much, can be so much more than that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
As one surrenders, then the Lord is rewarding accordingly.
Yes, as you should, because he reciprocates. That's what rasa is interaction. But the point is the Purusha has to deal with the prakriti according to the mood of the prakriti. Right? Purusha may want to get something done. It's just like, let's say, you want to, hammer the nail into the piece of wood. Okay? So, but now you're standing here, the nail is here, the wood is there, but the hammer is somewhere else. So how do you have to deal with the hammer? According to you, I'm the Purusha, I'm the man here, I'm going to bang this nail in, and this hammer is going to do as I say. So therefore you just take your hand, grab some air, and start banging the nail, right? It works, doesn't it? It works every time, it works like a charm, right? No, you have to get up, go over to where the hammer is, pick it up. Now, can you pick it up just any old way? Yeah, what if you pick it up by the claw? Right? You know, it's not going to work so good. Or you can pick it up by the other end, you know, like that. But you have to hold the handle. Now, what happens if you hold the handle where the claw is forward? No, it's not going to work either. You have to have it where the mallet part is actually forward. Right? And can you, what if you hold it loosely and you bang it? It's going to hurt. You're about to back. You have to hold it firmly. You understand there's so many things that you have to adjust with the hammer. Not, the hammer is not adjusting with you in the least. Right? So therefore, that's how you get something done. And then doing all that, now you can bang the nail as you like. So in other words, being the Purusha and actually getting something done means dealing with the Prakriti according to his position. So that's why Krishna says, as you surrender, he reciprocates. It's just the male-female principle. That's, there is no other principle. You know what I'm saying? Sambandha is the masculine principle. Prayojana is the feminine principle. Abhideya is the two of them interacting. There isn't anything else. I was just in the purport, just a few back from the verses I did yesterday. Prabhupada says that's what the universe is. It's the male-female principle. You know, some ask, you know, why do we talk so much about it? Because that's all there is. Right? We're taking the position of Purusha trying to enjoy the material energy property. Right? That's what Gita is saying. The living entity is taking the position of Purusha. Right? Is that clear? But you don't want it out of balance. But the point is, it is an important element to understand. Does that make sense? So, now we can either try to be the Anamoy Purusha, Pranamoy Purusha, or we can be the servant of the Anamoy Purusha, Pranamoy Purusha. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. This doubt cannot be considered, for after discussion of the different Purushas, to have, Saha, referred to Brahmaputra would break the structure of the progression expressed in the text. Right? So in other words, if you have a doubt when you get to Anandamaya Purusha, that it means the Brahmaputra means the Brahman, effulgence, and that's all, then why would it say Raso by Saha? Right, because here they're explaining all these things. The Upanishad is going through logic, and right, Upanishad is supposed to be intellectual. It's supposed to be logical. Right, it's not some poetic kind of aspect. So then why would it go through this progression and end up with something that doesn't have rasa? That's why it said before it's the tail. Right, it means you can have, let's say you interact with the horse. Okay? Now, the horse has a tail, right? It just comes along as part of the scene, right? But it's not about interacting with the tail, right? Unless you're a fly, then you interact with the tail. Does that make sense? Right? Yeah. So it's not that they don't go, no, but if it's there, then it has to be this. No, if it's there, then we only interact with the tail. You know? So that becomes the... The Lord, of course, is well known to be rasa, since he is filled with bliss. The Lord is superior to the Brahman, being its support, right? Because it's just his effulgence, so that's coming from him. Gita says, Brahmanohi pratishtaham, I am the basis of the Brahman, Bhagavad Gita 14:27. This statement as well shows that Krishna is superior to the Brahman. The various groups of people, just like you can say, the person themselves is superior to their foot. But it doesn't mean that the foot's not them. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so here's a quote from Bhagavatam. The various groups of people in the arena regarded Krishna in different ways when he entered it with his elder brother. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt, the men of Mathura as the best of males, the women as Cupid in person, the cowherd men as their relatives, the impious rulers as a chastiser, his parents as their child, the king of the Bhojas as death, the unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form, and the yogis as the absolute truth, and the Vrishnis as the supreme worshipable deity. right? Right? So everybody's seeing different accordingly, and according, that's how they're responding. So the point is all of these persons saw all this. How is that? How do you have so many rasas in one place? Because who you're dealing with is rasa. Does that make sense? Right? And then one can say, no, but then the person can have so many aspects and people see him different, an ordinary person. That's because the Lord has entered as all these potencies. So still the Lord is rasa. You know, it's not that entity. That's just the manifestation of the mode. It's not the jiva. Conditioned jiva, the qualities they have aren't the qualities of the jiva. They may be aspects of that coming through. It means it's just like if I have so many, I have a light, right? Now, if there's no cover, I see the light fully. Now, if I cover that, I don't see the light at all. Now, if I have that cover, I put a pinprick, then I'll see one little bit of light out of that. So you're seeing some aspects. So you're saying, oh, he's got this quality, so that's his eternal relationship with Krishna. It's like, what does that got to do with anything? It's just some manifestation of some part of the potency of the jiva. Right? But how it manifests is because manifests or not is because of Krishna's potency. How he covers it or how he allows it to come out. But because the jiva doesn't have a spiritual form to interact with, Krishna makes the material form. That material form is then controlled by those modes, and that's why it manifests. So if a materialist is nice, or kind, or well-behaved, that's the modes of nature. It's not the soul. So you can't say the karma is nice. The modes of nature controlling that body that particular conditioned jiva is in, that's nice. You know what I'm saying? And that jiva has a tendency towards, you know, the kind of position of goodness. So that's a better situation than the jiva in one in ignorance. But it has nothing to do with it, that he's nice. That's the modes of nature are nice. But if a devotee is manifesting qualities based on their devotional service, now that's the quality of the soul. So even though it may not be as developed, seemingly, as the external quality in the materialist, it's real. While the one in the materialist, as far as it being connected to that jiva, that's an illusion. Right? So a small amount of substance is greater than any amount of ignorance. How are you guys doing like that? Look, you want to move into the middle? Okay. Take the middle path. You know, come from the dark to the light. Come from the wet to the dry. It's the kind of dark setting. Okay. Yes. Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah, it means the unintelligent, then, because when we're talking about the Lord seen as the universal form, generally only, you know, real intellectual jnanis can do that. But as far as the actual nature of the soul, that's called unintelligence. Because if that's all you see is the Lord, right? In other words, when we study the universal form, we're not studying it exclusively. We're studying it as part of Krishna's, you know, greatness.
And that's a link to
it. Yeah, so therefore Para Brahman has all these aspects. So the Ananda Maya Purusha has all these aspects of these other four. Because what you're studying in the universal form is how Ananda Maya Purusha has pervaded all the other and manifested the other Purusha. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? Yeah. Is that okay? So that's the fun part. You're taking that's why we say is that in the Vedic, they're following the Vedic, so from that side you can say culturally this and that is better. Because you take a Vedic scholar and they are socially functional. They can interact, they can do. They may not be the life of the party, that's generally a given. But they can function very well socially. But you generally notice their dress is a little bit off. You know, one side of it is a little higher than the other. And that. But it's worn. It's like that. They're not totally unconscious. Because the culture gives all these different things so that they're able to do that. You understand? But when you don't have the Vedic culture, then it becomes even worse. You understand? So that's on the modern, you know, intellectuals on the bottom. Then you have your Vedic. Then you have those who understand the devotees. Right? So now, if they're so unintelligent, they're able to see the universal form or see how the cosmos is. So what about the common person who's not a devotee? They really, you know, make the boat, right? You know? Right? Yeah. Okay. Sridhar Swami, now notice the more intimate, the more close he is. Right? Sridhar Swami explained that this verse illustrates that Krishna, Bhagavan, is the form of all rasas combined. Right? So now Vishwanath is speaking from Sridhar Swami. Yeah. Right? Because everything needs to be in line with Sridhar Swami, because he is the authority. Right? Starting with Madhurya Rasa. Because the verse describes that different types of persons realize different rasas in Krishna just on seeing him. So it starts with it, you know, so that Madhurya Rasa, why Madhurya Rasa? Right? Yeah, it's all inclusive, it has everything else. And, let us say, if you want to bring out, yeah, well actually nothing, yeah, it just includes everything else. So, because the verse describes that different types of persons realize different rasas in Krishna just on seeing him. In other words, Krishna is the form of all rasa. Thus, both Gita and Bhagavatam proclaim Krishna to be rasa. The jiva attaining the Lord who is rasa attains the highest level of bliss. Okay. For after this, the discussion of bliss is concluded with the words Anandasyami Mamsa Bhavati. This concludes the examination of bliss. Taittiriya Upanishad 8.2. Okay, we were in 2.7 before. Yeah, because after that, it goes through all these things because it's explained that the Anandamaya Purusha is the supreme and it's all rasa. Then having explained that, then it goes through the levels of rasa, right? That is tasted, that we know about. You know, or bliss, right? Because the bliss is the whole point. Rasa is to generate bliss. If it doesn't generate bliss, what's the point? Right? If you have something, some liquid, you drink it, there's no taste. You'll stop drinking. Right? Taste is the whole point. So that's where it gives the explanation that we've told about in the past, where if you take a king who's the undisputed emperor of the world, like Yudhishthira Maharaj, you know, that's the equivalent to one unit of bliss. Right? No? We're not talking about the crackhead who got up at noontime and got it together to make it down to the disco, when the sun went down. Right? So, now, that's considered one. Then you have the rakshasas, yakshas, all them. It's 100 times more bliss than that, what they have. Then 100 times more than that are the general Gandharvas. Then 100 times more than that are the Brahma Gandharvas, right? The ones that sing in Brahma's court and all that. Then 100 times more than that are your residents of the heavenly planet. 100 times more than that are the demigods that control, have departments. 100 times more than that is the demigods that are the main controllers. You know, the directions, the lift, your main. 100 times more than that's Indra. 100 times more than that's Brihaspati. 100 times more than that is Prajapati. 100 times more than that is Brahma. And unlimitedly times more than that, his happiness is like a drop compared to the ocean of happiness of Brahma. Right? And then it concludes, now we've discussed rasa. Right? Once you've given the philosophy, then you put it in perspective. And then it's kind of like you're left sitting there going, oh. So, but I'm talking about, no, but I'm so happy here. It's like, no, you're not. No, you're not. And then, having done that, they just end it there. Because this is Upanishad. You're trying to establish the position of the Absolute Truth. And then the Acharyas say that ocean of happiness is a regular ocean. It's big. But it's not an unlimited ocean. So that's like a drop compared to the unlimited ocean of bhakti. Why? Because otherwise we'll be satisfied simply to get out of the material world and come to the Brahman platform. Right? Sometimes you hear devotees talking about, oh, when will I be free from all this material entanglement? And, you know, just be free from all this material misery. They don't say after that, and be established in pure, unalloyed love for Krishna. Because they're just, at that moment, disturbed by the onslaught of material nature. So therefore, the acharyas point that out so that you don't stop there. Right? Who didn't go to the Rasa dance when they blew the flute? The ones that have stopped there. They're in the spiritual world. They're in the spiritual bodies. Everything's spiritual. They got their nice house. Nothing's wrong with it. You know, the goofy patties stick on the wall. They don't fall off. You know, everything works great. And they're satisfied. Right? But it's not enough. It's still not the highest rasa. Because you're just dealing there with Brahma Pucham. You're just dealing with the Brahman. Yes? Yes.
Isn't it that they were also attached to their duties?
Attached to the duties, whatever it is, the duties produce some nice the results. Because there you do the duty, you always get a nice result. There is no bad result. You know what I'm saying? So that whole element of that. So in other words, it's not the considerations of Bhagavan. It's mainly your considerations of you know, Brahman, Paramat, that kind of level. Because that's what they've been doing for so long. Right? Because the ones that don't go when they play the flute aren't the eternal associates. They're already there. Right? Yeah.
Well, when you talk about that effect of the duties there, is that the Mana more Purusha or is it something else?
You could say, yeah, and it's more clear state. But the whole point is about Ananda Mana. About giving pleasure to the Lord, that interaction. Because otherwise, all these other things, the material world technically is just situation. Because in actuality, the soul interacting with spirit is not happening. Right? One person is interacting with another person, but the souls aren't actually interacting. Right? I say I'm this, you know, body. And they say they're there by they interact. It's like a video game, right? You know, you're sitting, you know, these, you know, international video games. You're sitting there playing. You have your thing, and you have all what you look like, and that. You can go up to the other person and talk to them, you know, like that. And you think, wow, yeah, this is really happening. But there's no nothing happening at all. The two people don't even know who each other are. Never met. Never will be. You understand? So therefore, there is no real interaction. But in the spirit, so we're used to that. We're used to just interacting with the situation. But now what we've made aware of is that there is people behind the situation that are part of that situation. That's the real thing. It's the people. The situation is only in support. Right? Just like the mother and child can interact no matter what the situation is. That rasa won't change. But there are more ideal situations in which you can nicely manifest. That makes sense. That's the point of Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya manifests the situation in which the rasa can be fully taken. Does that make sense? That's why then Sri Shakti is one, but we see two definitions, as Radharani and as Yoga Maya. Because the point is Radharani is going to be all that taste, but we need the situation for that taste to be tasted in. So therefore, Sri Shakti has these two aspects. Is that okay? Yes.
And then
where
is the situation of seeing situation is the source of happiness coming from?
That comes from the original is that if I'm thinking, okay, Krishna's enjoying, but what's Krishna enjoying? It's not the situation, it's the exchange that's happening in the situation. Right? So we look at the situation, oh, he's enjoying with the gopis, or he's enjoying this. So we think it's the gopis that is the cause of the enjoyment. You understand? So if I interact with the gopis, I will get the enjoyment he's getting. Right? That's the end here. And that's where we're looking at, we're not looking at this side. Of the river. We're looking at that side. We're looking at the other bank. Because the point is those gopis are only gopis on this side. If you're seeing them connected to Krishna, as soon as you see them not connected to Krishna, they're Mahamaya. You know what I'm saying? Like when Shankachuna comes to Balaram's Rasa dance and collects a few gopis, he's collecting illusory energy. Ravana is grabbing illusory energy. Mm. You understand? So that's the whole point. Is we'll take it as no, because it's, we're looking at by location, time and space, because that's our conditioning. No, here is one thing. There is another. There is nothing material there. But the point is it manifests as material if that's how you see it. It's Krishna's energy, so it's non-different from Krishna. As you surrender, He reciprocates. When Krishna reciprocates with you as rasa, as material energy. You know what I'm saying? The point is, the spiritual world means spiritual nature is manifested, the material is unmanifest. But if you see it that way, it will be manifest. Why is the material world here? Because we see it that way. If there was no living entity who is absorbed in the mundane consciousness, there would be no material manifestation. What's the need? You know what I'm saying? Keep Lord Shiva busy or something. He's getting bored sitting out in Vermont there, you know, with his wife and Nandi and doing kirtan and discussing about the Lord and so he needs something to do. You know what I'm saying? It's only because of us, therefore he expands as Shambhu instead of Sadashiva. And then all these things go on. So he's happy also. So in other words, it comes back to that principle is that even though one's in the spiritual form, in the spiritual world, but it's still just a situation to you. And that situation, you want to interact with directly without the Lord. But the point is, it's a situation that's directly connected to the Lord, is this Yogamaya. So we don't see the connection with the Lord, then we're not dealing with Yogamaya anymore, we're dealing with Mahamaya. And then, technically, we're in the material world, though physically we're not. Right? So it's just a matter of that end of that form, or the pastime moves on, or whatever, however it happens, or it's just, or you just at that point you're absorbed there, then you're shifted to here. Does that make sense? So just as Gokul is the place you can leave from, Gokul is the place where you enter back into. And now, seeing Gokul, you don't see it from that mundane vision. You don't come back here. You know what I'm saying? You move forward and progress. Therefore, Krishna says, once going there, you never return. He says, going there, you never return. Right? Because the point is you've made that switch. Right? Then you won't come back, because now you're seeing it in the proper light. First time you didn't see it in the proper light, therefore now you're here. You know what I'm saying? So all these things of time and space get in the way of this discussion. Because the point is the spiritual world that we're talking about in this connection is within the material phenomena. When Goloka manifests here as Gokul, it's the same Goloka, it's just manifest here. It's the same spiritual world. But you can see it from the, because in Goloka, in Vrindavan there, no one's going to see it that way because Yogamaya is not going to allow anyone to be there, it's not. Therefore, all the tridents and everything around. As soon as anyone gets close, then they're cut to shreds. Okay. Does that make sense? So then you have two problems with time and space, how you can be in the spiritual and the material at the same time. That's a Chinta Veda Veda Sutta. That is the Tathasta Shakti. Tathasta Shakti can do that. So the point is, if someone who has doubts about this whole process means they don't even understand the nature of the soul. Because it's the Tathasta Shakti that is making that arrangement. That's why it's not a topic for general discussion. You know what I'm saying? Do you find that there's a different aspect in this kind of discussing than in the past? Okay? But that's because we've been discussing all the elements for 3 years and different aspects of it. where because Bhagavatam is the place of Vishuddha Veda Veda Sakta, you can see them both happening at once. And it has nothing to do with time and space. It doesn't make sense. Or the meaning can be that other forms of the Lord on seeing Krishna become filled with bliss. This is evident in the following verses, right? So in other words, because he is bliss, they're able to realize that, or they become filled with bliss. And in any case, that filling of bliss comes from Krishna. So Krishna is bliss, he is the source of bliss, he is the reason, he is the dynamic principle of interaction, right? So now, in this, just taking this, now of the deities, you have Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, okay? And all these things. Up to now, then the Sambandha aspect has been always the most prominent. Because that's where our vision is wrong, how we see relationships. But if you take it from its natural, absolute state, of the Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, which is the actual prominent central feature? Prayojana in one sense, but how do you get it? Abhideya. Does that make sense? It's through Abhideya. Therefore, who's the prominent deity in our line? Madan Mohan, Sambandha, Govindaji, Abhideya, or Gopinath, which is Prayojana?
Govinda.
You understand? But it's all about Prayojana. But to get it, there's Abhideya. So it's about the interaction. So the whole point is, Krishna is bliss. We see, we realize because of that interaction is what's happening. Krishna is bliss. We come in contact with that bliss. But that coming in contact, that's the Abhideya. So therefore, we experience the bliss. You understand? The Sambandha has meaning in Prayojana because of Abhideya. Prayojana has meaning in Sambandha because of Abhideya, right? Means when there's a desire for something, Prajumna, right? You perform the activity, then you get the result, it's Aniruddha, right? Now what happens to that position of Aniruddha once it's gone? It goes back to Prajumna. So in other words, Abhideya is the medium between this aspect of Prajumna and Aniruddha, right? And where will that happen? That can happen, you know, just in nothingness, but it doesn't. It happens in a situation, that's Sankarshan. Right? Therefore, Sankarshan is that lord of that field. Therefore, Sadashiva is the wife of Yogamaya. Right? Because that's the field, that's Sankarshan. No? Yes? Have you ever caught that one before?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's just didn't catch like that. Yeah. Because it's always talked about her husband, you never see, right? Vrindavan, you never really see her husband. Right. Okay. Okay, or the meaning can be the other forms of the Lord on seeing Krishna become filled with bliss. Now, here also is that the other forms, in other words, the anamoy, pranamoy, mana, they become filled with bliss seeing anandamaya purusha. Right? So in other words, Krishna gives happiness even to the other Vishnumurtis. All other Vishnumurtis are devotees of Krishna in Braj. Right? I once heard a conversation going on with some Sri Vaishnavas at Tirupati. Right? And so they were discussing this. They didn't understand the full import. Right? But this was the discussion they were saying, is that when the deity goes to sleep at night, that room in which he sleeps is set up like Vrindavan. Mirrors on the ceiling, pictures of Radha Krishna pastimes, everything. He says he likes to remember about his pastimes. And he said that's why when you're standing in the line to see Balaji, everybody's chanting Govinda. No one's chanting, you know, Jai Venkateshwara, Jai, like this. No. They're all chanting Govinda. That's it. Nothing else is chanted. because that's what he likes to hear. Why? Because he is a devotee of Krishna Vrindavan. Right? What is Krishna and Dwarka thinking about? His pastimes in Vrindavan. You understand? So the point is it's just like for an individual, if they have some very close pastimes, very full, intense, intimate pastimes, now they're off doing something, they're sitting at work somewhere, you know, twiddling their thumbs. What are they going to be thinking about? Yeah. So now, the material world, to make it work, you need a billionth of a billionth portion of the Lord Shakti to make the whole one quarter, you know, the one quarter of the cause of creation function. Now, who's going to get bored? Right? So, in other words, all the other Purushas are absorbed in saying, in the Anandamaya Purusha. And that Anandamaya Purusha is pointed out means Bhagavan. And that means then of Bhagavan, that means Krishna. Right? Yeah. And the fun part is we're only on the invocation of the Bhagavan. Do you understand what we're talking about here? Is that, and if this is happening at the invocation, then what is happening for those who are qualified, having studied and appreciated, understood, absorbed the nine cantas, what are they getting from 10th canta? Right? Yeah, so we're jumping up and down about some little, you know, like this, that what is actually there? That's why it's the supreme shastra. You don't get this from any other shastra. Right? You get something, because all shastras are in support of Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam is the essence of the Vedic literature, means all the Vedic literature is pointing to this.
Okay,
these are the verses. Lord, Mahavishnu said, I brought the Brahmana sons here because I wanted to see the two of you. My expansion shall have descended to the earth to save the principles of religion. As soon as you finish killing the demons who burden the earth, quickly come back here to me. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:84-58. Right? Because you're dealing here with Sarupa Swayam Krishna. Right? So in other words, those aspects of which Krishna is establishing religion, those are the expansions of Mahavishnu. Right? Because it said that Vasudeva Krishna is killing the demons, establishing religion and all that. So that Vasudeva Krishna is expanding from Mahavishnu through Kiradaksha Krishna, right? Mahavishnu, Garbhadaksha, Kiradaksha Krishna, and Manifest. Right? So in that way you can say, in the same principle, is that, so because they're non-different, the difference, that you can say it's Mahavishnu who comes, or it's Garbhadaksha Krishna who comes, or it's Kiradaksha Krishna who comes, because they're all correct. Right? So, yeah. So there are different aspects of the same person. Now everybody wants to move this way. Finally get everyone off the right and the left to the middle. There's more space to it. Maybe move up more, pushing more. You okay? Oh, anyway, now it's almost time for this. Well, one more. There's time for your break. You can enjoy the Does that make sense? But because of Swayam Krishna, that's why it's so important he wants to see. Or you can also look at the aspect of the personality of Godhead. That's so much more interesting than those simply just the duties that he performs as God. In other words, the person Godhead is more interesting than the office-holding aspect of Godhead. Then next verse. Krishna possesses that form suitable for human pastimes to show the full capacity of his yoga maya. Right? It means any other form you don't get the full capacity. That form astonishes even the Lord of Vaikuntha. It is the pinnacle of auspicious qualities and enhances the beauty of his ornaments. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.12. Right. So, here is that the human pastimes are the highest and attract even the mind of the Lord of Vaikuntha. Because there it's pretty straightforward. I wanted it to happen, it happened. Right? He's God. You know, but here is that, you know, you have an idea, but how it unfolds, you don't know. Because he takes that human mood by putting himself under Yogamaya. The Yogamaya is only accomplishing his desire, but it's done so he doesn't know how the mechanics work. Well, in Vaikuntha, he knows exactly how the mechanics are working. So that makes it more interesting, right? There's more taste, more rasa. It's the full manifestation of rasa. Therefore, even the Lord of Vaikuntha is attracted. So all the other purushas are naturally attracted by here. We understand how shastra works here? So, therefore, the principle of all the manifestation where the Lord has entered into the world is appreciating their origin of, you know, the principle of Brahman, of transcendence. Same way as all the expansions of the other Vishnumurtis as we're taking Krishna and Yogadhyay are attracted by their origin of Krishna and Vrindavan. This is how one has to be able to understand the shastra. Right?
Yeah. I think it's illustrated very nicely in Chaitanya Charitamrita,
okay,
how Lord Mahaprabhu and Nityananda and Advaita and different devotees, they have that rasa.
Yes.
But, you know, Advaita and Nityananda and Vishnumurti basically, and then still the rasa was there. Very,
yes. Yes. And also then Lord, then Sadashiva as Mahavishnu,
yes,
as Advaita Acharya. Then, even though technically he's the last in the expansion, he's the oldest, right?
Yeah.
Then next is Nityananda, and Śrīla Caitanya is the youngest. You know, so you can have the rasa that way. You know what I'm saying? So it's all these things are it becomes more fun. Yes.
Is there a necessity to approach other forms of the world, other rasas?
Other rasas.
Yes.
Why would there be a need?
In order to understand the main rasa better.
But how will it assist to understanding the main rasa?
Because I may not be able to understand, you know.
No, but the point is the main rasa has all those other rasas in it. So when you're discussing other rasas, you're only discussing aspects of the main. Does that make sense? Okay. Krishna gets a headache. What do the gopis want to do? Give the dust from their lotus feet, get rid of his headache. Okay? Now, one may complain, the question comes up, but putting the dust from your feet on Krishna's head, since he's the supreme, aren't you worried about offense? Right? What's their answer? They don't care. Okay? So do parents, in the parental rasa, do they care what will happen to them as long as the children are okay? Yes? No? You have to think about it. Okay. Answer came from over here. No. It's just like immediate. You don't care. If you can do anything that'll make their position better, you'll do it. Okay? So that's the manifestation of the parental rasa within the conjugal rasa. You know what I'm saying? It means you're sitting here. What does Krishna's cowherd boyfriends do? If there's no mother to show them that. Right? They're not in Nanda Bhavan, they don't have to worry about knocking over anything. What are they doing?
Wrestling.
You know, like this kind of thing. Fighting over things. Who's better? You know, I'll defeat you, Krishna. You know, all these kinds of things. Okay. Now when Krishna and the gopis come together, and the gopis are picking flowers, and Krishna comes along, then what happens? Right? Krishna says, this is my forest, these are my flowers, so you got to pay tax. And they're saying, what do you mean we got to pay tax? This is a free place. You know, like that. No, it's mine. And then they say, well, actually, it's Vrindas. That's why it's called Vrindavan. So, you know, she's with us. So therefore, we don't, you know, if we have to pay tax, we'll pay to her. She's not asking for any. So, you know, what's it got to do with you? Okay. So what rasa was this within the conjugal rasa? Okay. Do you understand?
You know, they say that we need to go to Mayapur first, and then and you can go to Vrindavan.
So but the point is, those two are the same. My import in Vrindavan, there is no difference. If you see a difference, you'll never see Vrindavan. When you understand Mayapur and Vrindavan are the same, then you see Vrindavan. Otherwise, you don't see. Who made Vrindavan? Who made Mayapur? When Krishna took the mood of Radha, when he was manifesting that golden form, thinking of Radharani, and he explained how he's going to come, Radharani in Vrindavan created Mayapur. So this is just that full-blown aspect of that part of Mayapur, Vrindavan. So if you think it's different, you don't understand.
So the correct way would be to go to Vrindavan first?
No. The correct way is to follow the advice of the acharyas. In other words, that aspect of Vrindavan that you'll understand is given in Mayapur. Because Mayapur, then they are that Audarya, then you're able to appreciate. You understand? Because Vrindavan, it's like you do it right, fine. You don't do it right, there's trouble. Mayapur, there's leeway. It's the same place. In other words, you study it as the acharyas give it. So the point is that they're discussing all the rasas. And that's so you can understand that overall, but it's not that you have to approach the rasa. Right? Because the point is for us, what rasa do we know anyway except material rasa? Okay. Then bottom of 24. In any case, Krishna is rasa, the fruit. But this fruit is not directly situated on the tree of the Vedas. It has fallen down, Galitam, nearby. But this object, rasa, is not on the tree itself. It is not to be searched out in the Vedas, but rather is found in the mouth of Sukadeva. One can say that Vyas, knowing that this fruit was very tasty, took it and put it in the mouth of his son out of affection. Sukamukha can also indicate a cause. The rasa is sweeter because of coming from the mouth of Sukadeva. The sweetness of rasa is shown in Sukadeva's statements, such as the following. So, in other words, because of its sweetness, then his father's either put it in the mouth of his son, you know, out of affection, or it means because it's coming from the mouth of the son, it's become sweeter, right? You know, given the element of the parrot, it means those mangoes which the parrots have bitten are sweeter, right? Yes.
In Nyaya, the hatred was always in the ablative case, Mukha, that's what it's saying, and Mekul was.
Okay. So then, but see, the point he's pointing out here is that because on the Vedas, you won't find this fruit in the Vedas. It's not that the Vedas not referring to it, but as we see in Taittiriya Upanishad, means to establish this section of the verse, he's only quoting from a couple of points, directly quoting a couple of points. He's giving the background, but he's only a few points. But this section is quite big. It's actually quite big. To chant it, if you chanted it straight like that, it'd take you like 10, 12 minutes of chanting to get through this one section. And in it, Raso Vai Saha. Right? You know, he's using just, you know, about a few moments of each one. So that's the difficulty. There's so much of the other that you're not going to find it. So it's been revealed in this Bhagavatam. Does that make sense? But it's not that it's not from that tree. It's just not going to find it. Right? Just like the mangoes on the tree, you pick it from the tree, it's in your house, you won't find it on the tree. Okay, so this is Sukadeva's ghost, Sukadeva's fault. Because the devotees accept me as their friend, their relative, their son, preceptor, benefactor, and supreme deity, they cannot be deprived of their possessions at any time. Because then the point is what are their possessions? Right? It's Krishna. Right? So everything they have is Krishna. So how will they be deprived of their possession, which is Krishna? Right? Manifestations of the particular aspects of Krishna may come and go. Right? But never, you know. Bhuvi then indicates Rajabhumi. Babukaha and Rasika indicate the dear gopis. O dear relishers of Krishna's rasa, drink the sweetness of the rasa arising from his form, Bhagavatam, or Pivata Bhagavatam rasam alayam can mean relish rasa up to the point of embracing alayam, Krishna. Point is you won't appreciate the one unless you can catch the other. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why the technical is that it can be so technically explained at the same time as they can do, like we see in the first verse, the his definitions were very, very technical. Right? And here, the same technical aspects, but then he's bringing the aspect of the rasa. Krishna's rasa is indestructible, amrita, and flows away quickly from the mind and eye, dravya. Therefore, drink that indestructible nectar in the form of his lips. In that case, nigamakalpa taror, galitam phalam, means ragunigabhakti, which is the fully ripened fruit, galitam, on the tree of the Vedas. This ripened fruit is Raghunuga Bhakti, following after the sentiments of the gopis, which is the highest type of love. This is an acceptable meaning because, as mentioned in the Brihad Vamana Purana, the Vedas, taking up that kind of bhakti, accepted the forms of hundreds and thousands of gopis and drank the sweet rasa of his lips. This very secret meaning can be seen in the prayers of personified Vedas, 1087. Okay? Does that make sense? So we're getting into it is that if it's not the point, because you can say, but you're just saying that. We can't say that this is important to the Vedas as the essence and all that. But then, what is being mentioned of Brihad Vamana Purana, that the Vedas themselves, you know, took up these forms as gopis, right? Because it said, there's that group that's from Dandakaranya, right? There's the group that are the Vedas themselves. You know, the Vedic literature. There's the group that is coming from the heavenly planets. And then there's other groups here and there. Like that. Some persons explain the phrase Brahmanohi Pratishtaham in another way. Certainly they do, but such explanations should be regarded as incorrect, since they are out of context and fanciful. The explanation given here is correct. Right, because otherwise you say Krishna is the basis of Brahman. Right, that's what the point is, that if he's the basis of Brahman, then that Raso Vaisaha means him, the person, not the Brahmapucham, the Brahman itself, the Brahma Jyoti. Mamcha yov yavicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatit yaitan brahma guyaya kalpate brahmano hi pratishtaham amritasya vyasya Shashvatasya Chatarmasya Sukritasya Yaik Kanti Kasya Cha. The meaning of these verses is as follows. Though a person may question how one can attain Brahman by bhakti, and how one can attain realization of the one Brahman without qualities by worship of the Lord, right? Because they seem contradictory. Right? You're gaining realization, you can attain Brahman by, which is done through the intellectual process, by bhakti, which is seems to be sentiment, engaging the senses, all the things that generally a jnani doesn't do. The jnani doesn't engage the senses. His ideas will get Brahman. Here's someone who's only engaging the senses, they get Brahman. Right? And you're getting the impersonal by worshipping the person. So it's all contradictory.
Dualistic process to get a monistic.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're trying to take a monistic approach, and they end up with a dualistic result. Yeah, because the point is the Lord being both, and therefore, since they are natural contradictory elements, so the one always, you know, one gives the other. Right? Right? They basically, in other words, in other words, you know, proof of this is every day when you walk in the front door of your house. Yes? No? Okay. Okay. then how you can attain realization of Brahman to worshiping me, because he, I am the shelter, pratishtha, of even the Brahman. Famous in the Shrutis as the shelter of everything, right? So you can attain Brahman by worshiping him because he's the shelter of Brahman. Right? You can get money from a rich man because he's the shelter of that money. Right? Does that make sense? You know, if you sit down a $100 note and sit there and do puja and everything like that, you may not get a lot more. But if you do that same puja to a guy who's got, you know, oodles of that those notes, then you might get some. Pratishtha means, quote, that in which something is standing. Pratishtha, end quote. Pratishtha means shelter as well. It means it's standing there, it's sheltered there. It means it may be standing there, but it's not sheltered. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. In many Shruti texts, such as Taittiriya Upanishad, I am the shelter of liberation, amritasya. This meaning is made clear by the word avyayasya, indestructible, since this will exclude the amrita of the heavenly planets, right? Because why it would be Brahman? Because you could say it's, well, any kind of amrita. But then the Brahman, the amrita of the heavenly planets is destructible. It ends, right? And generally rather suddenly. Right? You know, so it's over. But the Brahman, that platform, is indestructible. So it has to mean that. I am also the shelter of bhakti, dharmasya, which is continuous, shashvatasya. Right? So, the shelter of bhakti, which is continuous. Right? Right? Being present as sadhana as a result of asadhana. Prema. Okay, so, that in other words, like the Bhagavatam says, that devotional service which is stable. Right? In Gita, Krishna is saying, when devotional service is stable, now that becomes serious. Right? That catches his attention. Because otherwise, if someone does something once and then stops and then does, you know, sometime later and then stops, it's sporadic, it doesn't catch your attention. But if it's continuous, it catches your attention. So that's the principle. So therefore, bhakti, that is continuous, right? As it means sadhana, and that result of that sadhana is prema. For the desire of prema, therefore you're doing sadhana. Right? So in other words, we're doing sadhana because of prema. We're not doing because we want the heavenly planets or we want Brahman realization. Right? So therefore the devotee automatically gets. And the shelter of prema, aikantikasya, sukasya, the goal of sadhana bhakti. Because everything is dependent on me, by worshipping me with the desire for merging into impersonal Brahman, one can merge into Brahman and attain the quality of Brahman. Right? So in other words, everything is there in him. He's the shelter of everything. So therefore, you worship him, you want to merge in Brahman, then he can arrange it. But you have to worship him. If you worship Brahman himself, then why is, you know, Brahman doesn't do anything. In support of this, Vishnu Purana 6776 says, Vishnu is the shelter of all auspiciousness and the Brahman. Right? So all auspiciousness would mean those activities that gain proper benefit and Brahman. Right? So it means the Brahman itself and the activities that can gain Brahman or anything else proper. According to Sridhar Swami, Sarva Gasyatmana means that Vishnu is the shelter of even the impersonal Brahman. Sarva Gasya. This confirms that what the Lord Himself says, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. Vishnu Dharma, in describing Naraka Dvadasi, says, Vasudeva is situated as the soul of all things, in Prakriti, the Purush, and the Brahman. Right? It's the soul of all things. So therefore, in Prakriti, the material energy, in the soul, the living entity, and in the Brahman. So he is the soul of everything. Because why would Brahman be there, right? The body, there's a soul, right? Because that potency comes from there. So Krishna, it's his qualities that the effulgence is coming from. Right? So therefore, Krishna is the soul of Brahman. Right? Because Brahman's not happening on its own. It's happening because it's Krishna's effulgence. Also, Vishnu Dharma, in describing Masarksha worship, says, just as Achyuta Paramatma is superior to all others, he is superior to Brahman. Therefore, unlimited Achyuta, you should fulfill my wish and remove me from all dangers. Vishnu Dharma 26:13. In Harivamsa, the Lord says to Arjuna, in the story where Mahavishnu steals the sons of the Brahmana, the supreme Brahman spreads throughout the whole universe, O Bharata. Understand that Brahman is my condensed effulgence. Brahma Samhita says, I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose powerful form radiates effulgence known as the undifferentiated, unlimited, all-encompassing Brahman, which is completely distinct from its powers displayed in unlimited planets throughout billions of universes. Brahma Samhita 540. So his effulgence is the Brahman, but is also distinct from when he performs his pastimes as the Supreme Lord. Right? So the transcendental planets, like that, so it's different. It's a different Brahman. So it's not that it's all Brahman, but there's different aspects. The Shruti text Gopal Tapani Upanishad says, I offer repeated respects to Krishna, who is beyond the states of waking, dreaming, deep sleep, and Brahman. So all states of existence, he's beyond all that. Because even one would say, okay, waking, dreaming, and deep sleep is material, then I will come to the Brahman platform, and then I'll be the supreme. But Krishna's still beyond that. So that puts him as the supreme.
So this connection, Brahman will be sat.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, because here we're talking about Krishna being beyond, so then you would be talking about Brahman, you know, just as Brahman. And then, in other words, Bhagavan is beyond Brahman. Yeah. Because otherwise, then the karmis are trying to work with waking, dreaming, and deep sleep. The jnanis are working with trying to work with Brahman, to go beyond these three. But Krishna as a person is beyond both these sets of the karmis and jnanis.
I think the Sanskrit in this verse is Turiya, which Prabhupada translates elsewhere as fourth dimension.
The fourth dimension.
Brings out the idea of setting all over.
That's true. Yeah, Ramanuja, I think the Ramanujas, even Madhvas, they use the word Turiya a lot. I guess it's their word for transcendence, or that fourth stage. But they use it a lot, that word. It's like one of their favorite words. Okay. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, so now we move on from the invocation. Okay, verses 4 to 23. So this is in the next group. Grouping, what do we have as a group? Yes, somewhere, right? So there's someone who shows all that right down. Okay, 1 to 3 and 4 to 23. Okay, so then that ends the chapter. The sages of Naimisharanya inquire from Suta Goswami. In this section, the narration of the Bhagavatam begins in the holy place of Naimisharanya, where great sages first glorify Srila Suta Goswami, the speaker of the Bhagavatam, and then begin inquiring from him. Right? So in other words, submissive inquiry is not going to come if you don't have respect. Right? So if someone... That's why I said submissive inquiry. Someone would say, no, it's just inquiry. I want to know. But the point, if you don't have respect, it won't be submissive. Right? And if it's not submissive, how will the process work? Because the knowledge has to descend from Krishna. It's a descending process. You want to understand it. If you want to use ascending process of your intelligence, then you go about it however you want. But the ascending process will never give you realization of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? That's why there has to be the desire to hear. Right? Does that make sense? Not as much the desire to know, the desire to hear. Because from hearing, you'll know. If it's only to know, then once I know, then that's it. That's the weakness of the jigyasu. Because he might, once knowing a particular thing, go away, because he's learning. Okay? The sages begin by posing three questions. Then they glorify the chanting and hearing about the Lord, and request Sutta to speak to them about the Lord and his incarnations. After Sutta describes that the age of Kali has just begun, the sages then ask a final sixth question. Now that Sri Krishna, the absolute truth, the master of all mystic powers, has departed for his abode, please tell us by whom religious principles are presently protected. Right? Okay? So that's the overall view of this section. Okay, now in detail, verses 4 to 8, setting the scene. Some five... Sorry,
yes. Presently protected, does that mean who embodies?
It just means... As we see, is that Krishna said he is the place where they can be situated, but he's also giving that shelter. You know what I'm saying? Because something can be situated, you know, like the kid can be situated in the middle of the mall. That doesn't mean he's protected. You understand? So when he says that religions are protected, that means it has to mean the Supreme. Because he is within whom all is situated. So in other words, the different principles, these different techniques and that have been the acharyas have brought out in these first three verses, as is the principle, then this will be these will be the principles on which all other discussions in the Bhagavatam will be based. Is that like that? Yeah. Some 5,000 years ago, shortly after the disappearance of Lord Krishna, an assembly of great sages headed by Shaunaka Rishi began an extensive series of sacrifices at Naimisharanya Forest. The sacred site of these yajñas was the hub of a great wheel that had been contemplated by Lord Brahma to encompass the entire universe. The holy forest of Naimisharanya had been selected by the sages because of their compassionate desire to do good for the people who would be born in the coming age of Kali. They understood that when sacrifice is performed here, demoniac persons, powers, and influences are subdued. They also knew that the only practical sacrifice during Kali Yuga is the Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting and hearing the holy name and glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shaunaka Rishi and all the other great sages were determined to hear Krishna Katha for 1,000 years, just to set the example for the population of this fallen age. One day, when their morning duties were complete, including an Agnihotra Yajna performance, the rishis very respectfully seated Srila Sutta Goswami. Very respectfully seated Sutta was upon the Vyasasan and humbly submitted the following inquiries. The rishi said, O Sutta, though vice taints you, you have attained complete enlightenment in your study and recitation of the Itihasas, Puranas, and Dharmashastras. All this is due to the mercy of his spiritual masters, which abides in you by your qualifications as an ideal submissive disciple. Yes?
What were their sacrifices? Can we say they were material or spiritual? What was their purpose?
Their purpose was to benefit. I mean, they want to benefit. And so that they know that there's higher purpose, but understanding fully what that means, then that's brought out in this aspect of the sacrifice. But in other words, they're performing their brahminical duties, they're doing their morning and evening yajnas, so that itself is a sacrifice, but the main focus of it was on hearing and chanting. And so then, up to now, they've heard the Puranas, they've heard the Mahabharata, and that was a natural conclusion, you know, for the sincere effort. Now they're hearing Bhagavatam. So, as we see, is that in the invocation, is that these other aspects, if they're not connected to pure devotional service, they're actually rejected. But if these other aspects of piety are connected to devotional service, means pure devotional service, then they're accepted as proper religion. Does that make sense? So the devotee is doing his morning duties and the smart is doing his morning duties. But the devotee, that's real religion, and the smart is actually cheating because they don't know what the real purpose is. if that makes sense.
Perhaps the essay question for this chapter is touching on this point.
Okay.
About the sages and their motivations.
Does that make sense? So they want to benefit. So, as they know, so at the time when they start the yajna, they may not fully understand what's benefit. Right? But by the end of the Bhagavatam, then they understand what's benefit. So in any case, even though they may not have been a complete in their approach, in the end result will be perfection. Because now all the living entities of Kali Yuga can now hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Because the Bhagavatam is always there, but now is an opportunity to hear it. Right? And then being heard at this place, then it benefits everybody. Being the hub of the universe, right? Whatever is in the hub. That's, yes.
But they are defined as a neophyte devotee.
Yes, security. But they're neophyte, but it doesn't mean they don't try.
Yes.
You know, but now, from their attempt, the Lord has been pleased, and now the Bhagavatam has been spoken. Right? And now we know the Bhagavatam. Even though it was spoken by Sukadeva to Parikshit Maharaj. But then it becomes revealed to us through Sutta and the sages of Vaikuntha. Right?
So this means that desire is the most important.
Desire is the most important. Even that desire has to be connected to Krishna. Just like you desire to chant the pure holy name, that's how it will happen. It's the desire to do something that is actually the cause. Because desire then turns into a need, turns into the effort. Right? But even you're performing the thing with the right, proper desire, even if the technique and all that results aren't perfect, if that desire is continuous, as it said before, then it will mature. Does that make sense? So, you can see, Vyasadeva wanted to reveal the absolute truth and give the ultimate benefit to everybody, but he hadn't with the Mahabharata. But because that desire was there, therefore his spiritual master revealed to him how he could actually do it. So desire, if you don't have the desire, just like what it means is, but what's just the word itself? That means you have the desire to hear. Then you can study Bhagavatam. Then you can get benefit. Because otherwise, you just read it because it's another book or something, then you won't actually get what the Bhagavatam is. Because otherwise, in India, like Prabhupada points out, and the Acharyas point out, is that these Bhagavat Saptaha's discussion of the Bhagavatam goes on. It's very popular everywhere, north, south, east, west, everywhere it doesn't, like that. But nobody really gets that much benefit. You know, they know Bhagavatam, they've heard a few stories, and that because they're familiar, therefore if you start to discuss, then they're interested. But the only benefit of them hearing that is they might be interested if you're speaking the actual, you know, actual Bhagavatam. But otherwise what they're getting is not. It's like a shadow or a reflection, depending upon who's discussing it. Does that make sense? If they're Maya bodies, then it's just a reflection. You know? Yes.
So this was the last thing that they heard from sages?
That I know of. I haven't heard of anything else after this. It's too early for DC comments. So. This basically will have to be it.
Vedanta is the end.
The end anyway, yes. So Vedanta is the end. So this is Vedanta. So. Okay. In his purport to 118, Srila Prabhupada explains why Srila Sutta Goswami has been chosen to speak the Bhagavatam. The secret of success in spiritual life is in satisfying the spiritual master and thereby getting his sincere blessings. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has sung in his famous 8 stanzas on the spiritual master as follows. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master. Only by his satisfaction can one please the personality of Godhead, and when he is dissatisfied, there is only havoc on the path of self-realization. or spiritual meditation. Because we think it's not I'm performing the ritual or I'm using my own intelligence. These are not the qualifications. The qualification is pleasing the spiritual master. Spiritual master is pleased when you take the instructions. You try to apply them in your life, right? Sincerely with the desire to attain Prema Bhakti. Right? To that degree that focus is there, right? To that degree, the process will run very quickly. Right? Otherwise, one may forget that it's for Prema. You know you want to please Krishna, but you don't think about it so prominently. So things will go slower. And then when you think, no, I have to be serious about this, things speed up. You know, and then we forget again, and things slow down. So that's where the point is, become to where it's consistent. So when it comes to the point of consistency, then there is, you know, that seriousness is manifest. You can say, now the person is very serious. It doesn't mean he's come to the topmost platform, but now he's very serious. Does that make sense? So that's what Prabhupada describes the Madhyama as advanced devotion. This is advanced devotion, so it's quite stable, it's steady. Right? Before that, it's sometimes there, sometimes not. Right? Does that make sense? It is essential, therefore, that a disciple be very much obedient and submissive to the bona fide spiritual master. Right? Not doubting the spiritual master, saying, well, Prabhupada's from the spiritual world, he doesn't really know the material world, so he really doesn't know how it works here. But we, you know, gross materialists really know how it works here. So therefore, we will, you know, we should adjust Prabhupada's instructions to match for the, you know, the materialistic society that's, you know, in reality that's around us.
Just being practical.
Yeah, just being practical. Just doing the right thing. But the problem is that the thing is, if you know the spiritual, you know the material. If I know my arm, I know what the reflection can do. Right? What they're trying to say is, no, the reflection mechanically works differently than the arm. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like here you can only bend your fingers a certain ways, but in the mirror you can do anything. Whatever you want, whatever you feel. Right? No, you can still only do the same thing.
That's a free mirror.
Huh?
It's a free mirror.
It's a free mirror. Okay. Srila Sutta Goswami fulfilled all these qualifications as a disciple, and therefore he was endowed with all the favors by his learned and self-realized spiritual masters, such as Srila Vyasadeva and others. The sages of Naimisharani were confident that Srila Sutta Goswami was bona fide. Therefore, they were anxious to hear from him. So in other words, he was in the proper position. He was submissive to his spiritual master fulfilled. And they had the same feelings towards him. Right? So you had bona fide teacher, bona fide student. Because one's a teacher as long as he's a student. There's no such thing as being a teacher and not being a student. Right? So even we say, but Krishna is the Adi Guru. You know, he's the topmost, the absolute, last position in authority as guru, right? But when it comes to learning about devotion, who does he learn from? The devotees. So there is no such thing as a position of teacher that in itself is absolute without having that position of discipleship towards someone else. There's no such thing. It doesn't exist. So that's something we create in the material world. Oh, I'm the teacher. I know everything. Like that. It doesn't exist. Like that. There isn't such a thing in creation.
It's a principle of authority is important.
Yes. Yeah.
New concept.
Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates in his commentary on the same verse. Vidam refers to persons who know. Paravaraviti means persons who know both Brahman with qualities and without qualities. Right? That's the point. So if you know to understand para Brahman, you know with qualities, you know without qualities. Like that. So those who exclusively only know without qualities, they don't really know Brahman. Guru should speak the secret to the disciples who has affection, snigdhasya, for the gurus, right? If there's no affection, then how do you speak? Because if there's no affection, you won't say yes. Just like, how long did it take to work change the Indra Yajna from being worship of the demigod to worship of the Supreme Lord?
Very quickly.
Very quickly, why? because of the affection, Nanda Baba and the other cowherd men, even though they're senior, right? They're the leaders of the community. But Krishna said, no, this is not right. It should be like this. So why did they do it? Out of affection. You understand? So that's the whole thing. If there's no affection, then you actually don't learn right. You don't have that position connected to Krishna.
So that's when critical thinking, that's lack of affection.
Okay. Yeah. Critical thinking is lack of affection, because the point is critical thinking means it's critical.
Yeah.
You know, why is it critical thinking instead of logical thinking or some other? Why critical thinking has been taken as the topmost?
Justify fault finding.
Yeah, because then you can say anything, do anything. You don't have to actually appreciate anything. So that's why we say so-called academics, so-called scholars. Because they can't actually, even within their field, have great realization. Right? Because you see, it's okay. They're able to use the knowledge to improve the quality of the situation, but they're not actually able to improve the quality of their personal life and interaction. Do you understand? So it's not actually beneficial. You know, as people, it's not. This is the potential, and thus... This is in the potential, and thus expresses the following idea. Since you were a disciple having affection for your gurus, they must certainly have revealed the secret to you, and you must have understood all those confidential subjects. While rejecting sages who extract their own ideas from all these confidential topics, then speak, we are asking you, the speaker of all authorized doctrines, about these subjects. Right? In other words, if you have affection for your guru, he must have revealed to you those secrets. So we, having the affection for you, want to know those secrets. That's how it goes down from parampara. Otherwise, just that you've read it, you've heard it, that you've been initiated, that's not the actual criteria. That's why it says, when Prabhupada gave initiation, and in that first initiation, devotees ask, well, what's the significance of it? It says you accept the guru spiritual master as God.
Yes.
And then I was kind of like, wait a minute, didn't he just tell us that he's not God? You know, it's like, you know, like that. Point is that he's the representative of God. So it's not a matter, it's not sentiment here. It's a matter of character. See, the intellectuals who don't have this kind of surrender, they'll take, oh, it's sentiment. It's just sentiment. It's not real. We have to be practical. But the point is they don't understand. It's a matter of relationship. It's a matter of character. Because they don't have that submissive quality. Therefore, they won't understand. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not a matter of how much you've read. It's what you understand. Because devotees are exposed to transcendental literature, the Shastras, probably more than any general person in the world. You'd have to find a theologian, you know, a very scholarly monk, you know, a very scholarly academic to be as exposed as we are. You can say, no, but in college they go to somebody this and that. And then when their time is up, after their 4 years, there's a good chance they won't want to look at a book again for years. You know, maybe after they're 30 that they'll start to think books are okay. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is the average devotee hears more Shastra, more philosophy, just in the day-to-day over the years and years and years, than any other people on the planet do. So it's not a matter of someone's not well studied, one's not an academic. It's a matter of that surrender to the spiritual masters there, therefore it's revealed. Does that make sense? That's the importance. So it's not just I'm very intelligent or I have a degree or I'm very practical or I'm very dynamic. It's a matter of how much you're surrendered to the order of the spiritual master. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
Kainaraj?
Yes.
Here it is said about the gurus plural.
The?
Gurus, but not
all gurus. Yeah, because it means diksha, siksha, it means the whole. Because Vyasadeva, you know, is not necessarily Sutta Goswami's diksha guru, but he's a siksha guru.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it means diksha, siksha.
All together.
Everything. Because that's the process. The process is siksha.
Yes.
The Vedic process is siksha. Yes. Pancharatra formalizes it more by creating what we call the formal diksha.
Yes.
Otherwise, the Vedic system of guru is siksha. There's only siksha. right? Means even any ritual of initiation is only for siksha, so it's very direct. But we have a tendency to think that there's somehow that the diksha is something separate. It's not about siksha, but it's about that affection for the spiritual master to follow the instructions. So all those who instruct, that's guru, right? Yeah. Okay, so end here. We'll continue with 9 to 11. Tomorrow.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki. So this evening we'll start 3:30, the Tattva Sandarbha.
Yeah.
So that would be Shiva Goswami.
Maharaj? Yes. So that these sages, they got this position to hear from Shukadeva Goswami in Namishranya forest, not because of the performing before Agyata Sukriti.
No, it's Agyata Sukriti.
Agyata Sukriti.
So you only get devotional suitors through Agyata Sukriti.
So the strong faith to hear from the authority is because of accumulation of Agyata Sukriti. The
yes.
Shraddha is strong.
Yes. It's always so. Devotion, bhakti only comes from bhakti. It doesn't come from
right.
Anywhere else. There is enough. That's also why it costs us mercy. Bhakti comes from bhakti. So it's not by something we've done.
Right.
It's not by trying to take credit. I would seriously, spontaneously eat those buckets of halwa.
Yes.
That's right.
And Krishna will.
I was very thoughtful, very intellectual, looking for the absolute. That's why I think it's causeless.
Because
bhakti has no cause other than itself.
Because also mentioned that they were frustrated by performing this yaga.
That's there, because it's Kali Yuga, so things
right.
don't work quite well.
Right.
It's just, the mechanics is step down.
Right.
Report.
Yeah. So.